This conference is being recorded.
Hello, welcome. This is Mitchell Levy from Happy About, and we're at the weekly author series where we're talking with some of our authors about some very interesting topics. And today we're talking with the ladies that wrote the book, Lessons About Life Mama Never Taught Us. Welcome. Glad that the three of you are here.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. So what we do, Happy About, is a book publisher. We're always looking for interesting authors who would like to write. Take a look at us at happyabout.info. The book, Lessons About Life Mama Never Taught Us, is also available on Amazon through the book chains and at Happy About, so you could take a look at us here. So let's start with a session. When I looked at the book and read through it, and actually when I first met the three of you, the first question that came to my mind, and one that I think that you should answer, is how did the three of you come together, and what sort of made you, let's do that one first, and then we'll do a follow-on of why'd you write the book. So how did the three of you come together?
Well, this is Linda, and I want to say hi to everybody, and thank you for joining us today. It's a pleasure having you with us. But to answer that question is kind of interesting. Danielle and Nicole were very young ladies, and I was in a long-term relationship with their father. And over time, he decided he didn't want to date me anymore, and we had become very close, and we made a pact that regardless of me dating their father anymore, we would remain friends. And it was a little rough in the beginning, but over time, we've really been able to keep a fabulous friendship. And I became somewhat a surrogate mother or older sister in some ways with them, but we had this revelation on a Christmas Eve now 2.5 years ago. And they were over visiting me for Christmas, and we were talking about boys and about dating and my experiences with men. And it dawned on us that night that regardless of my age, I still had the same issues that Danielle and Nicole had, and that we all had the same behavior patterns that were not healthy in the way we dealt with our men in our lives, and we made a pattern of bad mistakes. And Danielle, the youngest one, after I was kind of counseling the girls on things I learned through, you know, the School of Hard Knocks, says, we should write a book. And we all kind of laughed, and then we decided to do it. So since that time, we spent a lot of weekends together doing PJ parties, and we spent a lot of time actually talking about all of our own relationships and patterns and what we've learned from other people and ourselves, and put together 32 chapters that pretty much cover, in our opinion, a lot of the things that women have as misconceptions about the way they deal with men and their own health and lives.
Oh, nice. Thanks. Nicole, did you want to take a stab at that?
So, hi, everyone. I'm Nicole. Just going off more of what Linda said, she dated our dad and things didn't work out. And even though they didn't work out like we did, and that's kind of just how, like Linda said, our friendship just grew, and we started the book, and it's been an incredible adventure from there. But basically what we wanted to tell other women is that to live without the regrets. We want to teach them the morals and to actually put values back into the relationship, because I feel like today, especially at my age, I'm in my early 20s, so everything is, they think, a lot of women mistake sex as being, oh, well, that's going to get me into a relationship. That'll get me a boyfriend. When really, if you, all these things, it doesn't ever happen. So, again, just putting the morals and the values back into relationships, because today in school, they're not taught, parents don't talk with their kids about it. So just reiterating these values. So that's what we are trying to just teach the message, to just live without regret.
And Danielle, who should read this book?
I believe anyone could read the book. It has been, you know, an audience for everyone, you know, men, and then including, you know, girls my age who are in high school, to ages of Nicole in college, and then to older women. I think it covers pretty much all areas of dating in which, you know, men can take lessons from to understand women a little bit better. But I just wanted to say that, you know, it's funny because even though Linda dated our dad, we just think that it was for the purpose of us getting together and the three of us meeting. It wasn't really to date my dad, so we are very blessed and lucky to have each other in our lives.
Oh, how nice. How nice. Hey, so I was kind of interested. One of the questions that I'm thinking about as I'm looking at your pictures and looking at the age gap between the three of you, what was the most interesting element or experience that came out of the book writing process for you?
Well, I think the funniest part was the openness in which we could have about things that we know all people do and maybe think privately but often don't talk about. I mean, we were able to talk about things that we know everybody's born to be geared sexually, and we were made that way and designed for a purpose. But a lot of people don't talk about their sexuality, and they make it a myth. And we could actually laugh and have jokes about masturbation and things that most people would find, you know, very difficult to talk about. And I think just the mere fact that we could be so completely open and free to write this book together is why it can benefit other women, because we didn't hold back on anything.
I could tell that in the writing. So you guys would get together and have pajama parties, basically, and laugh and drink and enjoy each other. What was the happiest moment that came out of that, or the saddest moment? What was interesting about the interaction between the three of you?
I'd like to qualify before Nicole answers that. I drank, they drank soda.
Well, thank you.
We don't want to have any child custody things happening.
Perfect. Well done.
Nicole, what was your favorite or best memory?
Best memory. You know, I would have to say when Linda was having her house remodeled at the time, and I was coming up, I live in Southern California, so I was coming up every other weekend to write the book, and Linda was having her house remodeled, and so she had this little trailer out in the front yard. So we were having our meetings out in the trailer and still laughing and having a good time, just all bundled up while the house was being remodeled. So I thought, to me, that was the best time I had writing was in there.
Yeah, it had a sensation that we were camping.
Yeah. Out in the front yard.
How about you, Danielle?
I just think the overall process and learning about myself and realizing that it wasn't just me and it wasn't, you know, my fault and my mistake. You know, sometimes men are delusional. And I think we all learned so much more about ourselves, you know, and definitely being the youngest one, I think I have more advantage learning all these tips and advice and dating techniques because it has made my relationships healthier, and I'm dating someone, you know, who I did everything right in the beginning, you know, and I just think it's really true, you know, and we did our scientific experiments and they really do work, and, you know, changing my attitude changed my relationship extremely. But I think probably one of the best moments was just sitting in the rooms and, you know, talking and just, I can't even believe that this still I have in front of me is the book, and it's just amazing looking at it every time. And so just a huge accomplishment.
Oh, it really is. Hey, you know, the book is broken into a number of sections, so five different sections. You know, part one is dating, you know, part two is sex, part three is health, part four is marriage, and part five is life. And Linda, I'm going to ask you about one of the chapters in life. And then what I'll do is, well, Nicole, we'll let you pick one of your favorite chapters and talk about that, and Danielle as well. But I thought we'd start with chapter 27, Linda. And the chapter is Accept Yourself as Beautiful. You want to talk about that?
Yes. I think what's interesting is what I had learned through the course of dating and time is that women set themselves up for a standard of perfection. And, you know, we often kid that we dress and look our best more for other women than men. And actually, I think there's a lot of truth to that, because I tell a story in there about how I had been out on a wine tasting trip with some adult female friends of mine, and I had shared them with a guy that I was dating at the time, and he was a sheriff and, you know, a macho man. And I thought he'd go straight through the pictures and just look at me because I thought I was his girl, you know. And he was intrigued by every single woman in the photos, every one of them, tall, thin, older, younger, blonde, brunette, redhead. And I realized a revelation that day occurred to me. All of us are beautiful to men, regardless of what we think are our inadequacies. And we're our own worst enemies. Men think we're beautiful. Women are simply beautiful. You know, the most important thing is a smile and some eye contact. But it doesn't matter if your waist has gone up in size or your legs are short or, you know, you think your hair is not pretty. And what I've tried to get through in this chapter is that if you believe in yourself, you're an amazingly powerful woman. And men find you beautiful unless you're the one that's put up the wall and you're not looking back and you're not smiling and you're acting like you're giving off a vibration, obviously, that you don't have beauty in your heart. They can feel that. And so my whole purpose in that chapter was sharing with women, don't nitpick yourself to death. Don't not present yourself in an open and loving light to men thinking they're not going to like you because you're 15 pounds heavier than you used to be. You are beautiful to them just the way you are.
Ah, I love it. Nicole, Danielle, do you want to add to that at all?
I think today I have a lot of friends that are really hard on themselves as far as appearance, and they just go to extremes, and they miss out on so much of the other good stuff. It just enjoy, you're beautiful, and they're so hard on themselves. And I think a lot of people in general today are just, they don't just love themselves. And so it's this constant battle of, you know, who am I, and trying to figure out when really they just, there's nothing wrong with them. They create things in their mind. So I completely agree. Like, this chapter was wonderful, and that's our main thing, is to just accept yourself as beautiful.
Yeah. No, I really like that chapter as well. So if folks have questions, you could send them in to info@happyabout.info. And why don't we go to you, Nicole. What was your favorite chapter, what's a chapter you think would be fun to talk about?
I would have to say the first chapter, Stop Being Needy, Clingy, and Psychotic. This kind of drove one of the main discussions throughout the book, is that when things happen, I know my own story is, that's my personal example is in the first chapter, but when you don't hear from a guy, things get spiraling out of control, and you lose control of yourself by just doing the things, calling him and repeat, like, just keep calling him and emailing him, and really it's just, you just need to take a step back and just realize, you know what, I'm going to let him do his own thing for a while. I need to have my own life and be in control in the driver's seat when I need to be there. And I need to go and preoccupy myself with other time and not worry about what he's doing. So the crazy, needy, clingy, psychotic behavior that we all know drives us was definitely my favorite chapter.
And how about Danielle? Is that something you related to as well?
Certainly. I think we all can say that we've done a little psychotic, clingy attitudes, behaviors of ourselves, because we, like Nicole said, we do lose ourselves. And I just really wanted to quickly read this one part. You know, I just thought it was, like, very key in the book. It's okay for a girl to be in the lead in this dance. It's okay for me to be in the driver's seat when it is important for me to be there. It's not okay to do insane things with guys. I'm committing myself to never again be needy and clingy. That was on page 8, and I just think that's so important, and I just think it sums everything up, you know, and I think, you know, we do make that mistake, but we're trying too hard, and it's not, you know, it's that game that people play in relationships, so.
Yep, it absolutely makes a difference. Hey, Daniel, how about yours? What was your favorite chapter?
My favorite chapter, well, I think the one that I'm most proud about is the one that I wrote myself, was Tell the Truth About Abuse. But I love being at the top apple, is my favorite. I just think it's, you know, it just lifts you up and it makes you feel so much better. But Tell the Truth About Abuse was something that I had to let go of and open, you know, for the world and whoever to read about something I went through, because I think a lot of people these days bottle up feelings and, you know, tragedies that happen in their life, and it's very often, you know, that one is abused by family members or loved ones, you know, no one opens up and it just becomes this burden that affects the rest of your life, and, you know, you don't trust men, or, you know, you have all these complications, but I think it made me stronger, and I can't imagine myself being a certain way because of being abused from a loved one, but I was just really proud, you know, that I put it out there, and people read about it, you know. When they've read the book, they ask me questions about it, and I love to talk about it because I think it's something that people don't talk about as much these days.
But you want to talk about it a little bit more? Because I was actually proud that you did what you did in reading it, and I thought it was extremely brave of you to put this out there. Why don't you talk about it a little bit more?
Well, what happened was my mom's boyfriend one day, he just crossed the line, and it became this horrible thing in our family, and it drove my mom, my sister, and I apart, and, you know, we went to therapy for it, and it was just this constant lying and, you know, forgiving, and just couldn't see past the truth. And it's hard because, you know, when I told my mom what had happened, it's just, I mean, she loved this man for so many years, and how, you know, how can you believe the story that seems so absurd when he was like a father figure to us, you know, and then to completely turn his back on us and do something horrible to me. It was just devastating. I think still, you know, to this day, it's always going to be that, you know, unspoken thing between my mom and I. And when it does come up, it's uncomfortable because she had to give up something for my sister and I, but it was the right thing to do. But I think abuse is just so, it's so sad these days, and how, you know, it's sickening that fathers and uncles and grandpas, you know, do things to their kids, and I just can't even find a reason why they would do it. But I just feel and I hope that people that do go through abuse can stand up against it and talk about it and tell somebody important that it gets resolved, because you are the one that decides your future, if you want it to continue or if you want to stop it and something to do about it. And it's just like, you know, the stand up against cancer fight, you know, is going on right now, and that's just like the same thing against abuse. You know, stand up for what you believe in, and you can only make it worse by not doing anything. So.
Yeah, no, I think anyone who's listening, either live or later to the recorded show, you would be a great person to have come speak at a meeting to talk about this, because you were brave in your actions and fantastic in what you did. So I applaud you. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Nicole, you just came back from Africa, and I thought maybe you should chat a little bit about what you did and why you were there. It just seems like a slight departure from the book, but certainly a interesting thing to have done, and I thought maybe you should share it.
Well, thank you. Again, just commenting on my sister, I just think the world of you, Danielle, and you're so brave, and I'm so proud of you. So I love you. I just wanted to tell you that.
Sisterly love.
Love you. So I just got back from Africa, and I was doing HIV and AIDS education there. I lived in a village in Tanzania for 2 months, and I worked, along with doing education, I taught in schools, and I also worked with patients doing home-based care and getting medication, ARVs, to the patients, just because the needs of transportation are not available to a lot of the people in the village. So getting the medication to these patients is also what I was doing for 2 months. So it was the most incredible experience of my life, and heartwarming, and I saw tragedy and all of these things. It just makes me appreciate life so much more. And I would go back in a second. I actually want to. So, well, yeah.
Absolutely amazing. So, you know, one of the thank you for sharing. One of the comments that we talked about on the site and talked about in the book is a statement that says you are in the driver's seat, not the man. Why don't you talk about that?
Me?
That's the interesting thing about dating is, and as women as a whole, is when you start a relationship and you want it, you often think then you need to be available for everything they want. For example, one of the examples we gave is that, you know, if a guy starts asking you out, and this is a story I told the girls. I had a guy that asked me out like one night, and it was going really great, and he asked me out a second night, and it was still really going really great. And then a third night, I'm going, well, he's asking me out, so I went out the third night, and about the fifth date, he goes, this is going way too fast. You know, we're seeing each other too much. And my head is spinning because I'm going, well, you're the one that asked me out, you idiot. But so I realized after a while I was seeing this as a repeated pattern. And we don't claim that anything we profess in our books is at all to play games or to make, you know, make mockery out of the way you date men. We're just saying that if you change your behavior patterns and you live your life a little differently, then you're in the driver's seat instead of sitting there waiting for the phone to ring or giving them overkill on you to where they don't want you anymore. You've taken away all the interest, all the desire to learn more, and they already feel smothered that they can't breathe, and they want to back away. They will back away from you. You have to give them a lot of airspace and be a little bit, you know, booked with other things. Like Nicole said earlier, you're so much wiser. If they ask you out on a date the first night, no matter how much you'd like the date the second night, you need to say, I'm sorry, but I already have plans with Nicole tomorrow night, and I'm going to dinner, so, you know, maybe another time. And then just leave it. You have to create the time in between, and you need to be in charge, not let them rule the times, and then follow along like a little puppy dog, and then you're skipping along thinking, they love me, they're petting my head, and the next thing they do, they boot you out the door. So our point is don't follow, lead. Choose the times you're going to be available. Choose the times you're going to let them enjoy your company. And the rest of it, make it hard to spend time with you. They want someone who's successful, that has time with their career, that has time with other family members, that has time with other friends and hobbies and interests. You're a much healthier person, too, if you keep that in line, if that relationship holds. You've still got all your patterns of life going on a natural basis.
Got it. Nicole, what does that mean to you?
What does that mean to me? So basically, in the book we talk about if you have, you know, don't spend Friday and Saturday night with the guy. Spend, you know, maybe Friday night going out, dinner, and then Saturday night have that be with your friends and your family. So that way the time is split evenly. So it's just creating a balance. So that way, like Linda said, you're not spending all your time with a guy, and then if things don't work out, your life is, your friends aren't there, and your friends are kind of like, hey, where have you been for the past couple of weeks or a couple of months, because we haven't seen you. So it's just maintaining a healthy balance between friends and family. It's playing hard, a little hard to get, because it is. You're more interesting if you do have other things going on, and a person will want to be a part of that. So it's just, again, creating that balance.
Daniel, do you want to add to that, or should we move on to a different chapter that you liked?
Just really quick, I believe, you know, it's sometimes hard because, you know, we talk about don't play games, you know, and, you know, to play games is how you get the guy, and, you know, it's kind of confusing sometimes, but I believe it's not necessarily playing the game at first and being hard to get, but it's exactly, it's like knowing your balance, you know, and not being too available because, you know, guys play sports, they want to win, you know, and they want, you know, to feel like, you know, it's kind of, not like it's a rule, yeah, it's sort of a game to them, and they, you know, they want to see what you're up to, you know, and they want to hang out and date, but if you make them wait longer, just like sex, you know, make them wait longer, you're satisfaction, and you know, the end will be so much greater, you know, because you're not just throwing yourself at them, and that what makes you different from other women who do throw themselves at you, at the men, they don't find as much attractive or, you know, too easy, you know. So you just have to keep that balance, like Nicole and Linda said.
Well, we made a famous line out of this. It's in the book, and we still laugh, and it's because we know all women.
Yes.
It's not hard to get away from.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We need to be harder to get than harder to get away from.
Nice. So, it sounded like you were talking about, I'm thinking about chapter 12, practice celibacy and other dietary fads.
Yes. We like this. Is for those of you who haven't seen the book yet, you'll enjoy it because the book's unique, not just that we were three women of different ages and raised in different places and had come up with different family backgrounds, but also, you know, we really had some interesting things with just finding commonalities as ways women deal with men. But the celibacy thing is a chapter written by Danielle, and we have different chapters written from our voices, even though we shared and kind of agreed on all the chapters. But this is one that Danielle had written, and the joke behind it is I was telling her to practice celibacy, and she's kind of making fun of it, like, "Woo, what's celibacy? Is that something that's silly butt? Somebody who ate too much psyllium husk?" So we just made this joke out of it. But what we were trying to state is that the longer you refrain from intimacy, the healthier you're going to be, because if the relationship falls, you don't have to have that regret later and look back and say, "Gosh, if I knew about him now, or if I knew now what I, ooh, I can't say this, if I knew then what I know now, I would never have slept with that man." And that's what happens. You need to allow more time. And so we gave a rule that we agreed on and that we tested and have had fabulous results on, called the 3-month rule. And that means that you date someone and you allow it to be a normal friendship and not every day and not 2 days in a row, and you casually date and you let them seek you and you don't have sex for at least 3 months. And of course, that's not a hard and fast time frame to the date and to the moment, but just to allow enough time to really get to know someone's personality before you enter into that commitment of intimacy. And that has been a very good guideline. I know that it's changed my behavior patterns and Danielle and Nicole immensely, because our whole thing was that we feel like with Sex and the City and Desperate Housewives and all the things that are shown on TV, that sex is considered a norm and an accepted fact. It's okay. There's no reason not to. And kids go into 7th and 8th grade and go, "Welcome to 7th grade. Here's your condoms. Here's how you put them on." They don't know. If they're not going to church or if their parents aren't counseling them, they're not told anywhere that it's actually okay to say no. Mm-hmm. And that there's a time frame in which you might want to get to know someone before you share the most core part of yourself with someone that you might regret. So that's the celibacy chapter, and we actually talk a lot about making time before you sleep with someone, and Danielle dealt with that a lot in her chapters, and so did Nicole.
Nicole, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's, again, just going off of what Linda said, it's just allowing yourself to get to know the person, because, you know what, people can only put on a show for so long. So during the first maybe month or so, everything's really exciting, and you're like, "Oh, this guy's great," and all of a sudden it's like, "Oh, where did that come from?" You know. But so this time it's just allowing you to get to know the person, so that way, you know, they can't pretend for forever. So these things and these character traits come out, and so it gives you time to see this, and that way, because a lot of the time, I would jump into things too quickly and then later regret it. That was my biggest thing. And so after changing my behavior and after dating several of these men, after changing it, I've noticed that these character traits come out. And you know what? I'm so glad I waited, because just cut that person off. So, again, it's just allowing time. I mean, and you don't want that regret. That was my biggest thing, is that I slept with someone on the first night and I regretted it for a long time. So from that learning and just changing my behavior, now I will never make the same mistake again. So, and it's allowing yourself to, the friendship part, the early part, so have an actual relationship, because usually at first things are very physical. So it's just that time.
So to if you want to see these ladies, you can go online to Happy About, and you it's happyabout.info. You can go to Google and say Lessons About Life Mama, M-O-M-M-A, and stop there, and it will come up as the first listing. Or you go to happyabout.info, Lessons About Life, and it's just a dash, lessons-about-life.php. Or you go to our consumer section, take a look. And we've got a couple YouTube videos of you guys fooling around, you know, when you put the book together and talking about various rules and various outtakes, and some pictures, some bios, some questions. It's a great session. If anyone has questions, feel free to turn the mute button off by hitting the *5 button and ask a question, or send email to info@happyabout.info, and I'll look forward to integrating the questions into the talk. So let's talk. One of the things that really makes sense to me, Danielle, is chapter 7. It's practice honesty. You want to talk about that one?
Yeah, definitely. This is when I was dating a senior, and I was a sophomore in high school, and it was kind of secretive, and you know, like our friends knew about it, but not everyone did, and. You know, and I just think it was hard because we couldn't be honest with each other because we weren't even honest about our relationship and what we were doing. And it was hard because I just think in high school, you know, when you, like I said, we were at the party, you know, and you wear like a sexy shirt, you know, obviously you're going to get paid more attention to when, you know, boys see like your cleavage or whatever, you know, but then you kind of like, well, why did he treat me like that? But it's like you put yourself in that position by choosing that sexy shirt, like Linda said before, and, you know, and actually just having like a real conversation with someone is so rare because people in parties in high school, they want to hook up, you know, they want to drink, you know, and experience that and have a funny story on Monday in homeroom class. But it's not really... You know, I think in high school, we make that mistake of not being honest, and that's where we start bad behavior patterns in the relationship, because that's where you start, and you're not taught, you know, to be honest in your relationships, and you're not really taught how, you know, to behave and act in a good manner, and I think that's why a lot of girls have lost their morals, because they're not taught how to behave in a relationship. You know, and just because you're dating someone in high school for a couple months doesn't mean you should have sex, and that's the next thing to be serious about. You know, and I think that should be an issue brought up right away. You know, like, what were your intentions of this relationship? Or just, you know, I just think it's sad that kids in high school, you know, like, I hear about, you know, all the time, oh, yeah, I've been dating for months, you know, and then they, like, had sex, and it's just nothing anymore. And I remember, and Linda remembers that, back in high school, that was a big thing, and it was more secretive, and she, I remember, said that, you know, drinking alcohol was a very secretive thing in high school. It's like, oh, you know, look at my fake ID, and, you know, I drink every weekend, and people bragged about it, took pictures on MySpace and Facebook, and during Linda's time, it was a big secret. You didn't want anyone to know that you were drinking because you were the rebel, her just not, you know, the best match. But I think that this is a good quote, page 32 in the book. The whole dating thing continues going down this track as we persist in talking together about nothing meaningful. We are telling other lies and making hollow and flirty comments until he thinks we're going to hook up. And I think that's true. And, you know, if people are just honest, they won't get their hearts broken so much. And if you save a lot of time from, you know, being upset. But, I don't know, I think, you know, being more honest in my relationship right now, who I'm dating, you know, when something happens, I tell them right away, you know, I don't like that, or, you know, I'm upset with you, and we talk about it, and it's over with, and we change it. We don't bottle it up, we don't keep it inside, or we don't, you know, put on this pout face, or don't talk to each other for a while. I think that more couples need to do that, and if you can't be honest with them, then maybe they're just not the right person you should be dating.
Yeah, makes sense. Hey, if you don't mind, I want to read two quotes on the back cover and then have you guys talk about sort of, since this book's been out for a number of months, it'd be great if you talk about your experiences of sharing this book with other people and their feedback. So, you know, one was from Victoria, a 46-year-old female from California, says, "Thank you for your book. It made me realize after all these years what I might be doing wrong. I feel so liberated. Your book is awesome." And then another one from Richard, a 40-year-old male. "Not only is this book a great read for women and for young girls, but also for men and their young boys." And I'm just, both of those comments have this sort of experiential tone associated with it. And so, Linda, why don't you talk, have you shared the book with people or heard direct feedback of how people might have used the book and lessons they learned? Any sort of comments you can share with us?
I've shared it a lot, and I've had amazing comments in a positive way about how much they, everybody, regardless of age and just whether they related to the book and saw themselves in the chapters. And I think it's pretty amazing because I did come, and I say this in the book, from a very strict Southern Methodist background. I was raised in Kentucky. And one of the chapters that I really liked the most is when I talk about, we talk about what all the younger girls and single women do wrong by having sex too much while dating and the ramifications and costs that we'll have. But then we wrote a chapter that I wrote later on, and it's chapter 23, When Married, Maximize Your Sexual Advantages. And I talk about in that about how important it is to really turn on the sex and tips to use to keep your relationship and marriage exciting, because a lot of times, you know, you're giving it up way too early, but then women marry the man and then they don't give it up at all, and then the men are out cheating and it becomes a vicious cycle. The reason I'm sharing that and why I think it's kind of important to note is I had told a story in that chapter about my mother being married over 40 years and never having any affairs in a very small community like a little Peyton place in Kentucky. And I had a woman come up at a party one time and ask in front of everybody, "Oh, Helen, you know, with that hot man Byron and the professional that he is, how have you kept him at home all these years? And he's never run around and cheated on you." And I remember I was only like 10, and she looked this woman right in the eye, and it was a big social Southern gathering, and she goes, "Because in all these years, I've never said no." And that kind of hit home for me because I realized she found a way to keep him happy and enjoyed that intimacy they shared. And I talk about that in the book. The reason I'm telling you about that chapter now is I recently had to share the book with my mom and dad and exploit my 84-year-old mother's sexual energy. And it was funny because she was proud of it. She was proud of the book. She was proud of the chapter. And to this day, she knows that she took time to keep her husband happy and keep him from having the energy to want to go out and be tempted from the other women in his workplace that could have lured him away. So, yes, sharing the book from older people to younger people, I've had really great results, and even my parents approved. And I think all of us, Danielle, Nicole, and myself, were a little worried about that.
How about you, Nicole? Any thoughts in terms of the sharing the books and feedback you received and that sort of thing?
Yeah, no, I mean, friends and family have been 100% supportive, and I can't thank them enough for that. And just we've got a couple book signings now, and just the response from them has been incredible. I mean, they're very excited, and they read it, and they really feel like they can connect with the three of us. I mean, the book is funny. We try and make it's very humorous, and it's not told in, oh, this is what you should do. It's told in these are our stories, and this is what we've learned, and this is how we're changing our behavior. And so I feel like a lot of people can really connect with that, and it's been absolutely amazing. So incredible.
Nice. Danielle?
Okay, well, I'm going to be a little honest, more honest about my experience with the book. Being in a high school, very political, and, you know, they shine around athletes and, you know, athletics and smart kids, you know, that go on to Harvard, and it was hard for me because I felt like the school had kind of shunned, you know, the book and never put up any articles, you know, and never talked about it, because I think the issue was that it's real. It talks about sex and life, and sometimes people don't want to talk about that. And so I, from that point, that kind of hurt me, but I felt like that was their mistake and their fault. And it's like if they have a student that writes a book, how many high schools can say that they have a published author, you know, who's a senior? That's huge. And when I tell people that, they're so amazed, you know, and they can't even believe that, you know, my school did that. But, you know, the response from people that I work in a restaurant that I tell are so excited and bought the book, you know, and so supportive and just can't even believe that because, you know, there are people all their lives they tried to write a book and, you know, think that would be such a cool thing. And here I am, 18, have a published book. And people just think that that's amazing and want to learn more about it. And I think it's, you know, wonderful hearing that response, especially when it's been difficult. But I just think, you know, that it's just going to be up from here now, moving on. And so it's been a great experience. You know, the family's been very supportive and friends have been very supportive. But I think for my age, it's a little difficult to, you know, be so much excited for the book because they're immature and don't really, you know, I don't know how to just express it, but it's just like, wow, my friend's a published author. I think it's kind of unreal sometimes, but, you know, my true friends are very supportive and just think the world of the book, so.
Well, it actually, one of the questions that came in was something similar, and it is, I have a 14-year-old daughter. I can't quite tell, is this a book I should share with them? What do you think, Linda?
Well, that's a very good question. Our thought was there are some risque chapters in there, but there's nothing more risque than they're getting on TV, and that's the problem. When people see that this is a book, quote, about sex, they think we're talking about having sex. The reverse of that is true. We're trying to get people to see about not having sex too early. There's direct chapters from Danielle's and Nicole's experience and mine where, you know, that you need to be taught somewhere today by a third party how to say no. So in my opinion, this is what I tell people with young girls. Get the book, read the book yourself, and highlight the chapters you want to sit down at night and read with your daughter and discuss them because we have study topics at the end of every chapter that are thoughts to remember or ponder. And that way, if there's a chapter that you don't think is appropriate, like mine on marriage and giving blowjobs, okay, you might want to edit that one out. But it's what I suggested you do to keep a man happy at home. So that's a chapter you might want to intentionally skip over. But the rest of the book is very age-appropriate for girls of all ages. And I hate to say this, but a 14-year-old girl knows what those two words I just said mean, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's not as secret as people think.
Definitely, because I remember when I was in 7th and 8th grade, everybody knew, you know, what blowjobs, handjobs, and everything were because we were experimenting at that early age, and it's starting to become even younger and younger towards, like, 6th grade, and, you know, it's scary. So I think if you're so scared about sharing this book with your children, then that's a huge mistake as a parent because you can never be too early, you know, trying to prevent them from heartbreaks or, you know, I mean, sex is everywhere, on media, magazines, I mean, celebrities, it's everywhere, and these kids, you know, look up to those figures, and I think it's, you know, it doesn't matter what age, you know, I think, you know, that people are too scared of because it's going to come sooner or later, and so why wait when you think they're ready?
Well, it's fast. 6th grade, I have a son in 5th grade, and this is not a book that I think I'm ready for him to read cover to cover, but if this is a topic that in general, they're discussing and dealing with, you know, next year, you know, sometime soon, just, you know, 5th grade is 10 years old, 6th grade is 11. So you really think that's the right time, huh?
Well, I think it depends on every situation and families. You know, if you start to notice, like, your children, you know, are experimenting or you know, through the grapevine, through other moms or, I don't know, but I just feel like as a parent, you know when your child is ready for the talk, and, you know, your kids will ask questions and, you know, want to know things. I remember asking my dad what sex was and, like, how babies were formed, you know, very young, and he tried to give me the B's and talk, you know, but I think all that today is such BS. Like, I mean, people want to know the truth, and kids, if you try and shortcut it, you know, they're going to find out what it really, what it all is. And, you know, I think it may be too young. It may go one through ear and out through the other, but it's like you are telling the truth and you are setting them up, you know, for better, I'm trying to think, just, you know, better experiences, you know, than not telling them and, oh, we'll wait till you're a couple years older, you know, because kids are kids today and they're going to find out, you know, some way.
I think kind of going off to, Danielle, just to add, like, planting the seed early is, you know, you don't have to reveal everything, but at least planting the seed early, I think a lot of parents don't talk with their kids openly and honestly about a lot of topics such as sex. And I think that's the biggest problem, is that just making sure you have that open communication with your parents, because there's nothing more than your parents know more about you, and just having that trust and communication between them. And yes, it may be uncomfortable, but that's just something you have to deal with, and it's life. And I just think that the trust there is really important.
Exactly. And I just, too, I remember Nicole and I saying that we wish we had a book or something like this, you know, that our mom, you know, could talk about with us. But we didn't have that type of relationship, and it wasn't so easy to talk about those things until our age now, where we're very open with our mother. But I just think, you know, it's just a great thing to have, is to have, you know, something like our book, you know, for a mother and daughter to read and share, because I think that's how I would want my kids to learn, is from me and not from, you know, other people that are experimenting, or from people on TV or YouTube finding out things.
The biggest thing we want is, again, to live without regret, to teach the morals and the values, and to instill them back into the young generation, just because it's not there. So a lot of this, the book, deals with that. And so that's really our core thing, is to try and help other women, to help other girls out, to make better decisions for themselves so they don't get hurt and they can be in the driver's seat and learn to make their own decisions.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you. That was well addressed. We got another question, but before we do, does anyone want to go off mute and ask a question live?
Yeah.
Oh, please. Oh, that was you. Okay, so if there's no questions, we got one. It's regarding dating, and it's funny, Linda, because you sort of have a chapter on this, but it's regarding cyber dating. And,
oh, yeah.
And so... So maybe you could talk about that one. It's sort of the, you know, what are the rules? These, you know, I'm 40-ish and I've not done this before, and what do I do? So maybe you could talk about that.
Well, that's a big topic, and obviously with MySpace and Facebook, it ended up being a topic that Danielle and Nicole and I talked a lot about. Their version of internet connection was very different than mine. I was doing more things like Match.com and some of the adult singles dating and doing the networking through there. And then I saw the younger version. They kind of introduced me to the younger version. In fact, we can tell you later a little story about Danielle's giving me my first friend on MySpace. But mm-hmm. What happened that I found, and I've been single 10 years. So from the time my ex-husband and I divorced through the years, including when I dated their father, most of the men other than their dad I met through Match.com, and I would have sometimes up to maybe a couple times a week that I would meet new men for coffee or an afternoon cocktail or some public place. And I talk a lot about what an interesting, it's just like an incredible social study. I mean, you could just write a book about internet dating. I know many have. But, I mean, I met men, and I'm sure men could say the same thing, which they do about our book, that they've had the same experience, that had photos that were 20 years old before they lost their hair and gained 50 pounds and shrunk 6 inches, as it appears by the photos. Nice people, but they misrepresented themselves. I met people that represented themselves as single that finally told me that they really had a wife that they sent to Hawaii because that's where she wanted to stay, but they were still married. I met men that, like, one time I stole a French fry, which I thought was funny, from a guy's plate, and he almost murdered me because I stole food from him. So it was like the wildest lot of people you could ever meet. And I realized, that I had to be very careful. You can't go meet people in private places. You can't invite them to your home. You shouldn't invite them to your home until you know them for a while. And I met some nice men that I eventually had a couple-year relationships with that I would never have met if it weren't for the Internet. But I also met some very psychotic people and also just some delusional people that just really use the Internet as a way to prowl from woman to woman to woman to get laid as often as they can. They have no desire to ever be in a serious long-term relationship. It's just like the grass is always greener mentality for the next girl that they can have. And there's a huge, you know, pond full of women out there for them. So my chapter there basically sets out some steps to protect the younger girls, even up to women my age, to not do anything that would harm them or put them in a situation, and also to be aware that you have to, I don't believe in having pen pals on the Internet, because as long as you're just writing and reading their words, you can create any illusion or personality type that they're feeding you into your mind. I believe the sooner you can meet them in a public place and just nip it in the bud, the better off you are, because they can write anything and, you know, sugarcoat things, but whether or not they're really who they say they are and whether or not you can communicate properly and have that rhythm and ebb and flow you need to have a discussion with someone, whether or not there's any chemistry between the two of you whatsoever, that's going to be found out by a live meeting at a public place. So I give tidbits of rules that I think worked for me and worked for the girls to keep you safe and also just to minimize the frustration, because, I mean, I had some people I emailed for months that I thought I was married and going to Paris and going to travel the world, and, you know, they lived on a shoestring and a trailer park and were nothing like they said. So might as well find out early.
And do you want to just quickly read some of the rules that you have at the back of the chapter?
Yeah. Let me flip through here. Yeah. Let's skip that.
Sorry, caught you off guard.
You did. I'm having to find it in my book. I'm trying to find. Don't get lost.
So while Linda's looking for that, Nicole, you want to talk about cyber dating at all?
Cyber dating. Well, for the younger generation, it's Facebook and MySpace. And all of these tools are just used as, I think, insecurity. I mean, when I dated a person and if I didn't trust him or the situation, I would definitely be looking on the Internet or trying to look at his page or find out information about him, because obviously somewhere deep down there is a gut feeling that this person's not right and I'm fishing around because I'm looking for something bad to find out to make what I believe true. So I think if you have those gut instincts and if you're looking, you know, on his pages or his websites, like whether it's MySpace, Facebook, Match.com, and that insecurity is there, then it's not a good thing. And you shouldn't be dating the person, because if there's no trust, then you don't have anything to build from there.
And that's one of the rules. Actually, I had forgotten we made that a rule, Nicole, but it's a good one. She said in here, when we summarized this chapter, don't use the Internet as a spying tool. If you have to use it to check out their fidelity, then you're already having a problem. You wouldn't be on the Internet if you didn't think there was a problem checking them out. So
yeah,
that's part of what we said, is that one of the things is you can actually spy on people and become obsessed with what they're doing. And that's not a healthy tool of using the Internet. I mean, if we didn't have the Internet, you didn't know what people were doing 30 years ago, much less even 15 years ago, when they weren't with you on a date. But now it's all posted on, you know, the Internet, what they've done, their last move, and who the last photo they were taken with. So that, and meeting people in public places, and also my biggest rule on that is first impressions are usually very accurate. You know, if you get a real gut instinct that something seems odd, just go with it. There's lots of people to meet in life. There's no one worth holding on to if you think something's weird. Just go with the gut and move on.
Yeah, I think looking for those red flags, a lot of people just ignore them and they choose not to see them, and they go on, and the red flags are there. You just have to make sure you see it and don't ignore it.
So we're getting closer to the end, and Danielle, this time I want to start with you. And why don't you give us a quick wrap-up, and certainly the three of you feel free to chime in any time, of what didn't we talk about today, or what message does the person listening to this, what do they need to walk away with? What's the key element here, and what's important?
Now you caught me off guard. I just wish, you know, like I said earlier, that I had a book like, you know, this to learn things about, and, you know, about dating, and because it's hard these days, you know, to be in a relationship and, you know, struggling, working, and friends, and family. But I definitely think Don't Practice Cool Sex, Chapter 16, is a big one for high school students who I feel like practice, you know, who just have sex to have sex. And I know a lot of girls in my class, you know, were doing it in parks and cars, and, you know, sweet 16s, and, you know, and I just feel like if you will just be so much more respected, you know, by just waiting and by being classy about things like that. And, you know, because 10 years down the road at high school reunions, people still remember those things. And I feel sorry for those people that felt they had to practice cool sex to be popular in high school. And I feel like you don't have to do that to be popular in high school, just to be yourself and to, you know, love who you are and be with your friends. And I just, I'm just very proud of the book. And I don't know. And I think to learn that men don't change is a huge, huge chapter in the book, you know, because once dating older guys, you know, that they have all their patterns and they're used to their things that they do. And, you know, I think it's, you know, you have to learn that you cannot change men, you know, and every ounce you try, you can drive a relationship away because you can't force someone for so long who's done their certain ways, you know, to change them. And that's what I think, you know, Linda says about our dad, that she tried to change him and to love her and, you know, ended up, you know, not working out. And, you know, she just, that was a huge chapter that men just don't change.
Do you have a copy of the book with you?
Yes.
If not, you do? So read on page 69, appropriate number, is the summary of the chapter you're talking about, Don't Practice Cool Sex. And I think for those that don't have the book in front of them, what's phenomenal, every chapter has a couple points, bullet points to take away. And if you're going to share that with your children, even those bullet points by themselves make sense. You want to read the three bullet points on page 69?
The things to think about or the...
Oh, this one is Don't Practice Cool Sex. So end of chapter 16.
Is it like
the
goal?
Yeah, the things to think about. Right, sorry.
Okay. Number one, if you have any doubts, then you shouldn't do it. Two, having sex young doesn't really make you cool. Three, having sex young isn't the experience it looks like in the movies.
Oh, isn't number three really true?
But I actually really, really like the end of the chapter when it says, you need to bring some sense of commitment to the act. I'm going to reserve sex, or at least a sex act, for a guy who really appreciates me and who will be there for me in other ways than merely physical. I'll never again have sex just because it's the cool thing to do.
No, it's a good chapter.
Yeah.
Thank you. Nicole, what comes to mind? What didn't we talk about? What's the really, you know, hot topic? What should we point out to people listening?
I would just say waiting for the right man was another topic that we talked about in the book, and that's just to not compromise your own life and just to settle with someone average. I mean, if it's not great or if it's not satisfying and more, hold yourself to a higher standard, and just as hard as it is, if you're not happy, the right man is out there. If you spend your time with this person that's not right for you, you're missing out on the other opportunities that you could be out finding someone else, or just even just traveling and being with friends and family. So I think definitely waiting for the right man. He's out there. You don't have to get married, you know, right away. You don't even have to get married at all. It's just definitely waiting for the right person.
Perfect. Thank you. And Linda, how about you? Is it, do you want to wrap up point to this discussion?
I do. I have two things I wanted to add, but I think what they're talking about, and we review this in the book a lot, is that it's sad, but it's very true, and it's common that almost all women would prefer to be in a bad relationship than face the fear of being alone and starting a new life. And it's such a backwards way of thinking, because you are better off experiencing your life and loving yourself and doing your activities and getting to your yoga and opening your opportunities to someone who is superior to whom you're sticking with and compromising and settling with, so that you can bring to you the person you really deserve. But you stay in there groveling at their feet when they're not even right or good to you. And what we're trying to do is get women to look up, hold their head up high, have the self-esteem, realize they're beautiful, and not feel like they have to settle or compromise, because once they get out of that relationship, beautiful things will happen. So that's one I wanted to share. And my favorite chapters I wanted to add in the book, to me, that I think are education for women, are in the health chapters, and that's Know Your Body and Taking Care of Yourself. And I felt like in our time together, I taught Danielle and Nicole so many things that they really didn't know about tracking your menstrual cycle and realizing how your hormones affect your moods. And when you do feel emotionally challenged, maybe going back and looking at the dates and realizing, oh, I'm not insane, I'm just getting ready for a period. And my health chapter outlines those things, as well as getting regular physicals and being very careful about what women, young women, and older women can catch with unprotected sex, and also how often to go to the doctor and what to look for, and to take care of themselves even by working out and getting good sleep and just focusing on their whole body being as healthy as they can be, and by knowing it and understanding it and working with who you are instead of fighting against who you are.
No, that's great. Linda, Nicole, Daniel, thank you so much for participating. This is a fantastic book, and this was a really fun conversation. Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I really appreciate everyone who participated. The book, Lessons About Life Mama Never Taught Us, is available on Amazon bookstores and at the Happy About website. Please feel free to go online, and certainly if I have questions for the authors, I'm happy to forward them to you as well, and they make themselves readily available. This is Mitchell Levy from Happy About, and we are glad to have had you join us today and look forward to interacting with you sometime in the future. Have yourself a great day, and thanks again. I'm going to turn the recording off, which unfortunately means I often lose people. So if you want to call me back, I'm happy to talk to you. I'm at 408-257-3000, and take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Danielle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we still here?
I think we are. You guys were great. I'm proud of you.
Oh, it was so fun. Why do people ask questions?
Hard topic, probably. I think everybody's gone but us.
Yeah. Is Mitchell there?
I think he hung up.
Okay.
Wow. I was so proud of you guys.
I missed the whole thing, and I made it up on the spot.
You know, you were both amazing, and I just really enjoyed it, didn't you?
Yeah. I want to do, from this, I want to do live conferences. I think it would be so much more fun to, like, have a room full of women and just, like, talk, you know?
And be able to answer all the questions and go through the chapters and maybe talk a little bit about what each one's nugget point is.
Yeah. Telling about, like, I mean, just stories and issues. I mean, we could talk about, like, if someone in the audience is having a problem or, like, things like that, you know?
Well, now that you're And maybe this weekend and the following weekend when we do the Barnes & Noble book signing, we need to get together, the three of us, and put together now our new action plan for getting the word out and getting some of these live seminars booked, because I think you're right. That's what we would really enjoy.
I think the live seminars and then doing, like, San Francisco, I think would be so fun doing, getting, like, the San Francisco signing. And, like, if we do the seminars, we can hopefully get enough people and publicity that hopefully if we do San Francisco, we could do, what was it, Cron 4?
Yeah, I'd love to do Cron 4. I still want to do that so bad.
Yeah.
And they do book reviews every Saturday and Sunday on there with the Hat Lady, and she, I would love to get on with her. It would be so much fun.
I'm almost wondering, like, if you have to go down there in person, or how, you know what I mean, how that works as far as, like, getting the contact information.
Yeah, I mean, we might have to look at that, because, I mean, we sent a book to them before, but I think they get thousands, so I think we really need to do something more dramatic to get them to see who we are, you know?
Yeah.
We need to go stand out front with big posters and wave and, like,
hey, maybe, well, I don't know. I was going to say, maybe the, what time is the signing on Saturday, the 6th?
We're down there from, let me look, I think it's like 2 to 4 in the afternoon.
Okay.
We are on the 6th. It starts at 2 and it goes till 4.
Mitchell's calling me.
Oh, good. He's going to take it. He's going to tell you you're a good girl.
Oh. Answer it.
Want to pick it up?
Linda, do you know what time it is right now?
It's 1:10.
1:10? Okay. Thank you. I mean,
I didn't answer his phone call.
Huh?
What?
Would San Francisco, would the Barnes & Noble at San Francisco, would that be easy to book?
I'm sure it would. I just had 2 months in a row booked out, and because I booked San Jose, and I booked this one somewhere else. Where is it? It's not far away. Oh, Barnes & Noble on October 3rd at 5 o'clock in Dublin.
Okay, October 3rd.
Yeah, so I had booked September and October, and I was going to do November for San Francisco, but I just didn't make the calls yet because I got so busy.
Yeah, do November because it's Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so maybe we could do something in the middle of November. I can give you guys the numbers, and maybe one of you can call and get it booked. We have references now from 4 stores, so people are happy to have us come to any Barnes & Noble.
Okay, yeah, I would, if you send me numbers, I'll really try and get an article in, or see what I can do about possibly doing something for San Jose. You know?
Yeah, here's the San Francisco numbers, okay?
Oh, wait,
ready?
What?
Here's the number to San Francisco store.
Okay, hang on 1 second. Let me get a pen. Okay, go for it.
Okay, her name is Terry DeSalvo.
Terry DeSalvo?
It looks like D-E-S-A-L-V-O.
D-E-S.
And she's the customer relations manager, just like we had out here with Celeste.
Okay.
Her phone number is 415.
415.
Then 292.
292.
6762.
6762.
And you can let her know that we have done Antioch, Walnut Creek, and we're booked for Dublin and San Jose. And the San Jose location we're going to is mm-hmm. East Ridge Shopping Center. They
That's
have several.
East Ridge.
Is that the great mall?
Yeah, it's a big mall, and we're going to be able to do that because all the back-to-school shopping that day, we think we can draw a lot of people just walking by the store in.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to try and see. I'm going to call today and see if I can't get anything, an article and something for San Jose.
Mitchell's
calling me. I'm going to pick up on the other line. Just a sec.
Okay.
Hello? Thank you. I thought it went well.
Linda, ask them how many people were on.
How many people were on? I still have them on the other line.
15 were on, Nicole.
What?
Oh, he just let you.
How many? What do you say?
15.
15.
Oh, exactly. He's going to get a report, but he doesn't know yet.
Okay.
Online it said 15.
Oh, online it said 15.
Yeah. I feel the bathroom's still back. Can I call you guys back?
Hang on 1 second. Wait, what do you have to do?
What?
What do you have to do?
I feel poo really bad.
Just go to the bathroom. Stay on the phone because you're not going to be able to call us back because we're on a conference thing. I want to get Celeste's number as a reference, and then I'll call this Carrie woman.
Okay, all you.
What?
What?
Is Linda still on the phone?
What?
Linda, is Linda on the phone?
She's talking to Mitchell.
Okay. Oh, you know, that was so fun.
I know. I thought it wasn't really going to be that good, but I was mistaken.
I didn't think it, like, was going to be that much of a production. Like, I was really surprised, you know?
Yeah. When all those people were calling, and I was like, what the hell?
Cool, cool. Yeah. So, Antioch, Walnut Creek, Dublin, San Jose, Eastridge. So we'll have like a week. I'm going to see if I can't get an article in really quickly for San Jose.
It's San Jose Mercury. Is that the main newspaper?
San Jose Mercury?
Yeah.
If we book San Francisco, then what we can do is then go to Cron 4 to promote it, I guess, you know?
Yeah. I'm so excited for you to get here.
I know, me too, tomorrow night. Yay. I'm actually going to run because I'm going to go to class, but I guess I will just talk to you a little bit later.
Yeah, sounds good.
Sounds good.
Okay, so let's call Linda. I'll call her back, whatever.
Okay, yeah, we can talk a little later.
Okay, sounds good. Love you.
All right, love you.
Bye.
All right, bye.